evening, everyone. Hello. We're going to get started here. Thank you very much. Welcome to the Morro Bay City Council meeting, August 22nd, 2023. I'll ask the city clerk to establish a quorum and call the meeting to order.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening. Councilmember Barton?
Here.
Councilmember Edwards?
Here.
Councilmember Landrum?
Here.
Councilmember Ford?
Here.
And Mayor Wixom?
Here. At this time, I'd like to take a moment of silence, and in doing that, I'd like to take a moment to recognize the Paso Robles City Council just recently lost Mayor Martin, Steve Martin. He had quite a legacy of leadership and dedication to that community, and I'm sure it will continue to inspire them. And I'd just like to recognize him for a few minutes, so thank you. Thank you. And with that, could I ask Chief Watkins to please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
To the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everyone. What a beautiful day in Morro Bay today. Mr. Neumeier, closed session report, please.
Good evening, Madam Mayor. No closed session items to report.
Thank you very much. With that, we will go to Mayor and Council Member reports, announcements, and presentations. I'll kick off. I'd like to thank the volunteers and all the members of the Maritime Museum for the great adventure, having the San Salvador here for the last few weeks. It sailed out. I was able to attend their dinner, learn a little bit about the history of it. It was just wonderful to see it here. And today they shared with us that they had over 10,000 visitors. So that was wonderful. What a great, great event. Last week we had the great honor of having an oath of office and recognizing our new city manager, who you will hear from in a little bit, Ms. Yvonne Kimball. Thank you to the staff and all the residents who came out and celebrated with us, welcoming her to our community. And I had my mayor's meeting last week. Nothing much to report out of that. A lot of information for the League of Cities that some of our council members will be attending as representatives, so we'll get a report back from them. And tomorrow I will be attending an update for the annual grand jury, and it's just sharing the items that they've gone over for the past year. So I will share that with you at our next meeting. And with that, I will turn to Councilmember Edwards.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor Wixom. I just have one for tonight, and that is we have the Tunes in Tidelands coming up here, presented by the Morro Bay Active Adults 55 and Plus, or lovingly, the Senior Center of Morro Bay. It's going to be the Thursdays September 7th, 14th, 21st, and 28th. Those are the Thursdays from 5 to 7 p.m. It's free concerts in the Tideland Park area, 339 Embarcadero. Bring your lounge chair and a blanket, your friends and family, and come on out. There's also going to be food and drinks available for purchase, too. Look forward to seeing you there.
Yes, thank you, Mayor Wixom. And Council Member Edwards, it's funny that you brought up the concerts at the park because that was on my list to talk about. But I just want to say that my husband today was like, when are those concerts? Those were awesome. So shout out to Kirk back there, our director for Park and Recs, and your team, and all the city workers that help participate in organizing that and making it happen. I also have on my list to let you know about the Community Foundation of Estero Bay. They're having their Morro Bay Sings Fleetwood Mac or tribute band on November 4th. It'll be at the Community Center. And if you'd like more information, you can go to communityfoundationesterobay.org. and tickets go on sale September 1st. And I'm not sure if this is accurate, so I will have one of our Maritime Museum folks, I'm sure, let me know if it is or not. But I was looking up also the Maritime Family Fun Day because it truly is fun, and I really enjoyed last year's. And it's listed as October 14th from 10 to 2 at the Maritime Museum, and it's a free event. So if it's incorrect, I will correct it at our next meeting, or we'll have somebody here in public comment correct me. But that's a really great free event to attend, and you can, if you're not familiar with the museum, you can walk around the grounds and familiarize yourself with such a great spot here in our city. And lastly, I attended the Estero Bay Alliance of Care meeting, and their guest, and referred to as EBAC if you hear it around town, it's called EBAC. And Jeff Eccles was the guest speaker. He was there speaking about the Housing Trust Fund, and basically we had a really healthy, lengthy discussion about housing in Morro Bay as well as the Central Coast. So that's all I have on my list, Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Barton.
Okay. With music as part of the theme here tonight, apparently, I wanted to report on having taken in a musical event at the bakery on Morro Bay Boulevard. They're having Thursday night music, and the band was just a kick in the pants. My sister and I went together and loved it. So anyway, I throw that out. They're going to do, I've forgotten how many likes, maybe six Thursdays. So it was a lot of fun.
Councilmember Landrum.
Thank you. I just wanted to report that Mayor Wixom and I are both on the WHRF subcommittee, and we had a meeting this week. And I just wanted to kind of update everyone on that. So FBV, Vlaanse, Black, and Veatch are approaching completion. The Department of Drinking Water Challenge test was completed in July, and now they are waiting to be able to pass a 14-day acceptance test. They have to start over every time it doesn't pass, so that's where that's at. Anvil is finishing up their punch list and should be done on Wednesday. There are some unresolved issues, however, and I'll tell you about a few of them. One is there's a problem with the brine line or outfall line, which is the treated effluent. In the winter rains we had, it was really fortunate that we had those rains because it was really tested. And instead of getting 8.1 million gallons a day, we get 6 million gallons a day with the brine line. So the pressure is, there's something wrong with the pressure. So that issue is being worked out between Waterworks, the designer, and Anvil, the installer. And one of the things that we might have to look out for is that might incur further road work to people, you know, an inconvenience to people. There is another issue with the drainage ditch around the plant site that is being discussed, and that is ongoing. Residents may notice that the monument sign on Teresa Drive will be removed, and maybe a temporary wayfinder sign and then a smaller sign will later be installed as more permanently, as there was an issue with the first sign's placement. Better news is that the city has evaluated that along the bike path there were 27 trees removed and is going to replace them at a 2-to-1 ratio. Instead of outsourcing this project, they feel it's best to make it a community project. And I know there's discrepancy over how many trees were removed, and maybe that can be addressed at that time. And that's all.
Thank you very much. And with that, I will turn to our city manager, Ms. Kimball, for city manager report, announcements, and presentations.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. I'm very happy to be here today for a variety of reasons. This is my first council meeting, and my husband told me to keep it short because I need to go home. So, but I still have things to say, right? So first, let me express a couple of gratitude statements. The first one is that I, as you, many of you know, that I had just finished a, I just drove 500 miles in the last couple of days, and then I think coming home, coming to this community that I call home for the last week is the most comforting part. So I tell myself that, okay, I really think my family and I made a good decision to move to this community. So I wanted to share that with council, with staff, and with the audience. It's we're fortunate to live in such a community. And then, as Mayor stated, I wanted to express my sincere gratitude to everybody, Mayor, Council, staff, and the community for coming to my swearing ceremony this Monday. It was such a classic event that I was not prepared to be so heartwarming for me. And I wanted to say that I had be a city manager across the country and move from state to state to state, coast to coast. And this summer really is the coolest summer I have ever had. I would say that. However, your welcome is the warmest I have ever received. So that's a really interesting comparison. And it just, I need to express my gratitude. I cannot say thank you enough for all you have done for me and the staff, and I really, really looking forward to like I said, roll up my sleeves, no sleeve today, to get to the good long list of the work that we need to do, and I'm excited about that. Okay, with all that, I had an opportunity to meet some of my department heads this last week. It was kind of short, a lot of things going on. But I had a really, you know, good productive discussions with those that I had a chance to speak with. And there's a couple of highlights, actually, I wanted to share with the council, with the community. We, over the weekend, as Public Works Director and I sent out an update to City Council regarding state water situation. And I just want to take this opportunity to thank the community for your understanding. I know you didn't notice any difference, but that's because our Public Works Department is doing a great job in collaboration, and also the operators there are doing a great job to keep the service going and keep it safe and reliable for all our customers. Public Works Director is going to give you a more detailed report later. Also the fire department, fire chiefs, he is not here tonight, out of town on the training. And then, but I want to share, I know I told the city council, but I want to share with the community that our very own Morro Bay Fire Department is sending a troop to helping fighting a fire 600 miles north of us. And we really want to keep them, keep everybody's safety in our thoughts. And hopefully the fire will be contained very soon. And then the Harbor Department, there was an issue. I'm not going to get into details of that issue, but involves some sort of a vessel that may be parked improperly as a city, the city harbor. But I'm just so proud that our staff was able to turn that situation around timely so that it avoid a expensive resolution and a conflict. So I'm very happy about that. I want to let the city council know about that one. And then also we discussed and in the context of the music and the events, we discussed staff together, team discussed the upcoming events in Talent Park. And then we are aware that with every musical event, there may be some concerns about noise. But I just wanted to council and the public know that we're aware of that, and the staff will try our best to, you know, to mitigate whatever we can do. That's short enough, right? Okay. All right. Thank you.
And I know I will give Mr. Qualick 1 minute to just give us a quick update on the state water and also the traffic safety study workshop date.
Thank you, Mayor and City Manager Kimball.
I'll try to keep it to 1 minute. So first, thank you. Yes, City Manager Kimball. Our operators are working full time to make sure that the city maintains its water supply during the state water shutdown. This was an unplanned, unexpected shutdown. A major pump blew out in Devil's Den, which feeds the coastal branch of state water. And that means we had to kick into our reverse osmosis water treatment system so that we could treat our groundwater here. It actually has a bit of a better taste because it does not contain geosmin, which state water does. It's just kind of like a smelly byproduct of algae that's totally harmless and can be removed with your typical, you know, charcoal filter in your fridge. But nevertheless, is there. Our state water is much cleaner than that and has a high level of treatment. We expect the state water situation to continue on for another month or two, at which point we'll go back to state water. I also do want to mention that we have flyers in the back of the room for the local road safety plan community meeting, which will be held in this building on Wednesday, September 6th at 5:30. If any of you have concerns, anyone in the community, if you know of anyone in the community who has concerns about their street or speeding or crosswalks or unsafe conditions, those folks want to attend this meeting and raise their concerns. This is the meeting that's going to form the basis of the local roadway safety plan. There will be a couple more. One will be at PWAB, and we have another one, TBD, as to date and time. And if anyone has questions, they can reach out to myself or our city engineer, Eric Riddio, and you can find our information on the website under Public Works page. And then finally, just want to give a shout-out to our engineering division for finishing out the roadway work down at South Bay. Want to thank the community for their patience. There was some overnight closures on South Bay Boulevard that impacted the Moore Bay and Los Osos communities. That work was done as of the 16th of August. The only work that remains is some striping. Striping contractors are extremely busy right now. We hope to get one out in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And then that capital project will be concluded. That project had started before the before the floods, and once the floods came, it delayed that road work. But, you know, shortly that will be another one in the books for us. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Qualick. I appreciate that. With that, we will open public comment. I have two speaker slips to start with, Aaron Oaks and then Linda Winters, please.
Good evening, members of the council and staff. My name is Aaron Oaks. And before I begin my remarks, I just wanted to welcome Yvonne to Morro Bay. I'm so glad you're here. You're going to love these cool summers. It was a little sticky, a little humid the past couple of days, but that's just the exception to the rule. And the second thing I wanted to do is offer my condolences to the family and loved ones of Steve Martin. He was a wonderful man. He was a visionary, had decades of incredible civil service, and he was a personal inspiration to me because he showed everyone that even a marketing guy can get into politics. So, you know, and he also kept a nonpartisan spirit to him, and I consider him and Tom O'Malley two lovely friends of mine. Two incredible giants of North County, and you know, he will be sorely missed. And I love what he did and what he continues to inspire for all of us in the community. So I wanted to talk about a letter that I read in the New Times a couple of weeks ago, where there's a group of Morro Bay citizens that took aim at proponents of the initiative to preserve the land use zoning on the Embarcadero. I felt like it was a slap in the face in a way. I was disappointed because I feel like there's consensus in the community that the majority of residents are showing their opposition to the proposed battery storage system. And we can't be attacking each other on this because I think the consensus is fairly clear. So, you know, I invite those group of citizens and to come together to discuss solutions. How do we move forward? How do we move past the proposed battery storage system. What do we do with that property there? And I think we need to get into a conversation about constructive solutions, which is why I'm proposing a community task force, which would include residents from people who support and oppose the initiative. But we all have to have one understanding about this, that there's no battery storage system should be in Morro Bay, period. Because this is not what the community wants, and this is not what we truly believe in. I believe we can have a green approach, a strong environmental approach without it. And I'll be more than happy to entertain any information that anyone wants to get from me on a task force. You can visit my website at aaronoaks.com and contact me through there. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Linda Winters, and good evening to the mayor and city council and Ms. Kimball. Thank you very much for all of that you're doing for us already. I am a 29-year resident in the same mobile home park on Main Street, where we were flooded three times this year. And we were extremely happy that the last big storm threat missed us. Because we've already been ravaged enough, and we really were praying against any kind of rain. And once again, first let me say welcome to you, Ms. Kimball, our new city manager. When you were sworn in, not on Monday, but during the last meeting, the city attorney introduced me to you and as Mobile Home Linda, which I speak about quite frequently. I mentioned the Morro Bay Rent Control Ordinance, and you stated that you were familiar with it, and you are right on top of my approval list. Thank you very much for that. Last Tuesday night, I attended another city council meeting in San Luis Obispo. And I was there to support Becky Jorgensen, who is the leader of the Hopes Village effort and providing permanent housing for the unhoused. And I also spoke about the Monday night community dinner that happens right here at the Vets Hall every single Monday night for the past 9 3/4 years. There's been approximately 32,000 meals served, and never one missed, up to and including even that stormy Monday night on January 9th, which all of us may well remember, and we had no electricity. But the Morro Bay Lions Club provided a candlelight dinner for the 20 people who came for that particular evening. I used our success in that particular format of the Monday night dinner to explain to the San Luis City Council how they could possibly implement a similar program for their city. I invited all the SLO city council members to come and see what we do. And I invite all of you to come and break bread with the diners, visit with them, learn about them. You may even become a regular. And one more thing I noticed about the San Luis City Council. At the end of the meeting, there were only two or three people left in the whole room, and I was one of them. Thank you very much, and I'll see you on September 12th. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, public comment is open.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, Council, and staff. My name is Terry Simons, and I introduced myself to our new city manager and told her how pleased I was to have her here. I, too, was a longtime believer in Steve Martin in Paso Robles. I did several projects up there, and he was the most progressive person I've ever met in politics. So having said all of that, I'm here tonight on a rather obscure item. There is a new cable company, for lack of a better word, providing fiber optic internet to our community, and they're offering that on a fairly limited basis. And so I've been communicating with staff to try to find out how they are operating in our community and if they have a franchise agreement with the community, because my last time I spoke, we were talking about the garbage company's franchise, and my investigation to that is that it turns out that's a fairly lucrative franchise for the city. Looking at my own case, and it may not be indicative of the community at large, I spend several times what I spend on garbage on internet services and related digital feeds. So I can only imagine that the community as a whole buying internet service and not paying a franchise fee equivalent to what the garbage company pays, we may be losing upwards of $500,000 a year in internet franchise fees. And I just want to call the attention to that. The reason that we got involved in it was we were trying to organize our neighborhood to get service from the new company, and they basically told us that it's not economical for them to service us because we don't have enough neighbors that would benefit from their service, which runs, in my mind, very contrary to the normal requirements of a franchise agreement or public utilities provision of utility services. And I just like to kind of get to the bottom of that. I suspect that since Charter had a franchise which was taken over by Spectrum, that Advantage may be building on the basis of Digital West, which was a San Luis company that was sold to Advantage, which is a nationwide company. And I suspect they're using that basic fiber optic tie that extends out from San Luis to provide service to neighborhoods. And if so, I would think it would be beneficial to the entire community to make sure that they are being equitable in their provision of service to any Morro Bay household that requests it. Thank you.
My name is Chuck Stoll. I'm a resident here in Morro Bay. Have been for about 20 years, I guess, now. My wife and I both attended Cal Poly, so we're pretty familiar with this area. I certainly want to welcome you. I hope that we have a good working relationship, since I'm president of the Lions Club, and we're a service organization, and we even have a plaque on the outside back there at the door. So I'm sure I don't. Good. And wherever you were before, I'm sure you had a good relationship with the Lions Club. Okay, good. So anyway, I'd like to thank a few people that have been especially accommodating to the Lions Club. We've been around for, you know, about, well, longer than we've been a city. So we're very, very happy to be working with city employees and especially JR and Josh and Greg. We've had the opportunity to work with him several times. And what makes the whole thing work is that we can actually talk to and communicate and console one another sometimes. And I sure appreciate, Carla, your interest and service organizations and those nonprofits that are working, you know, like Morro Bay and Bloom and Historical Society and all the rest of them. And Jen, I certainly want to thank you for all the effort you and your husband have put in all the years, Thanksgiving as an example. Once again, we're hoping that we can do Thanksgiving. We've already paid for the refrigeration unit, so we better be able to use it. And thank you, Carla, for setting that up for us. I just wanted to emphasize the fact that we have some really talented and dedicated people within our organization. Linda Winters is one of them, of course. Sharon O'Leary is another. We have probably 20 that worked here last night, Monday nights, which we are proud to say that we've been consecutive over 500 meals. And like Linda mentioned, we even did it under candlelight, pretty romantic, but it was different, okay? Especially when we couldn't get across town. That was a little unusual. Some of us actually waded across a freeway, I think, to get over here. So it, not waded, I mean, 2 inches of water. So I'm just hoping that in the future we can make some arrangements to meet and talk about some common interests. Okay? Thank you very much. I appreciate your help.
Good evening, Mayor, City Council, staff. My name is Sharon O'Leary, resident of Morro Bay. I'd like to follow up a little bit on what both Chuck Stoll and Linda Winters shared with all of us tonight. Yes, we've just gone past 32,000 meals served. It'll be 9 years, January 6th of 2024. The program has developed and is serving the community in many ways. So we started out as community dinner through EBAC, and over the years, the program has evolved in many ways. One of the things I like to point out recently is that we have three programs acting at the same time. We have the Food Bank, San Luis Food Bank Coalition, headed by Morro Bay Lions Club. They're a congregate agency partner, which supplies the food as a food bank. We're pushing about 600 to 700 pounds a week in food for the community. The second part of the program is community dinner, which is headed by Jane Butler and Christian Munoz, but includes a donation group, which is headed by Linda Winters. I want to thank the community for their generosity. We've been able to provide all sorts of donations for the community. And then the third part of the community dinner is the outreach we do through the resource office. And by the by, yesterday I had a call from Jason Holland, who's going in for gallbladder surgery, and I was glad to pick up cases that he's working on for him while he's in recovery. So again, we have three programs going on at community dinner. What we're doing now is going out to the community and canvassing, because we now need a second site, and probably in the future a third site. So we're looking around in Morro Bay, in North Morro Bay, and would welcome any suggestions from the community as we go looking for a place. We do have groups ready to take it on. There will be a partnership with somebody doing the food bank. Sue Morris from Cayucas is willing to step up and do the food part of it, the dinner part of it, and of course we'll do outreach. So we're looking around in the area of another place for a community dinner. But in any case, we're very grateful. It's a hub. We serve the community in many ways and are glad to be able to do it with the sponsorship of the city. We've used this hall without any problems whatsoever for, like I said, it'll be 9 years in January. So thank you all very much.
Good evening. My name's Betty Winholtz. Change topics for a minute. Last week, I at public comment talked about having just traveled the bike trail behind this power plant for the first time since it's been open, and I was pleased to hear Mr. Qualick say that the landscaping of that trail will hopefully come back to the community, and I heard Councilmember Zara Landrum affirm that tonight in her comments. What I said to PWAB last week was that I was a little disappointed that there were the grading that was done alongside the trail appeared as though when it floods, the sidewalk will flood as well, because there's no like little ditches where the water can run off to. And Mr. Qualick explained that that's in essence preserves the trail, But for me, it doesn't preserve usage as kids walk through the rain to school. So I don't know that you can fix that or not, but I want to raise that to your attention. I also mentioned that there were a couple of new dips in the sidewalk where the rain will gather and stay, and that was explained and actually done intentionally, which I thought was odd. My two remaining concerns are that the concrete drainage towards the south end of the trail be continuously cleaned out because it's stacked with mud and it can't drain past that area and flow into the PG&E property. And so just bringing that up. And then my second concern was that the chain link fencing between the trail and the highway is not complete in all areas. And some of that was taken down. I don't know why, and I don't know whose responsibility it is to put it back up, but it seems to me that's a safety concern, and that whether it's the city or Caltrans, that fencing needs to be completed. Thank you.
Anyone else for public comment? AGP?
Thank you, Mayor. There are no raised hands in the queue.
Thank you. With that, I will close public comment and bring it back to council. Mr. Qualick or Mr. Grimm, I'm not sure. The fiber optic cables, is that Ms. Burlingame who handles the franchise that Mr. Simons could reach out to?
Thank you, Mayor. I can answer that briefly. We don't have a franchise agreement with the fiber optics company, so we don't have any control over how they provide their services. It seems to me that they made a business decision to not provide fiber services to residential areas that have undergrounded utilities because there's a higher expense associated with that. It's much easier to cross over poles with fiber optics than to dig underground and do all that. I believe the city received a request to see if we could somehow get them into a franchise agreement or apply our franchise agreement with the cable company to the fiber optics company. That's something that has not been explored and would take some investigation. So we wouldn't have an answer for that now. And it seems to me that would take a significant effort to do.
Thank you for that, Mr. Qualick. And before you disappear, the tree planting, will that include bike path, drainage, and those items when we have a public community
I would let our program manager, Paul Amico, during his presentation later on this evening, talk about the drainage. It's correct what Constituent Winholtz remarked that the dips in the bike path were intentional. They were intentionally put there for drainage, and so I'd let Mr. Amico describe that in a bit more detail.
Thank you.
I certainly made note of the concern about maintenance along the path, and so I'll pass that down through the team, make sure we're doing that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Qualick. And just a shout out, thank you to the Lions Club, to Chuck, Sharon, and Linda for all you do in our community. It is greatly appreciated. Thank you so much, and all your group. With that, we will move on to the consent calendar. I will open public comment on the consent agenda, and I have one speaker slip to start with on item A3 from Mr. Alexander.
My name is Homer Alexander. I'm going to comment on A3, the investment report, because it seldom gets discussed in public. It's a spreadsheet. Can you see it? Note the total is a little less than $71 million. To put the $71 million in perspective, the current citywide operating budget is $36.6 million. The $71 million is $10.5 million higher than last year and $41 million higher than June of 2019, the last full year of the pandemic. There are a number of reasons for these substantial increases. There are three of them are revenue exceeding estimates coupled with prudent expense control, big ticket capital projects that were delayed due to the pandemic, the way the new wastewater water system was financed. For some of you who might not be familiar with this report, the Local Agency Investment Fund, or LIFA, is a money market fund that is managed by the State Treasurer's Office. The balance of the other investments are insured certificates of deposit, Federal Home Loan Bank bonds, or U.S. Treasury bills or notes. The Public Agency Retirement Services, or 115 plans, were established by the city last fall as a way to increase the returns for the city's existing OPEB funds and to allow the city to smooth out the volatility of the CalPERS investment returns so the UAL could be paid down sooner. Unlike all the other items on the report, these two plans include investments in both equities and fixed income securities. They are managed by Hallmark Capital, which is a financial advisory firm. As a side note, the spread this spring between the yield on the funds in LIFA and the U.S. Treasury bills with maturities of less than a year was a little over 2%. If half of the funds in LIFA had been invested in T-bills, the city would have earned approximately $200,000 in additional income. I'm not suggesting the finance department isn't doing their job. They have a lot more important things to do than to pay attention to the fluctuations of the bond markets. If staff time is an issue, and if they haven't already done so, Highmark Capital or another firm may be able to help with cash management. In closing, this report used to be on the finance committee's agendas. It was dropped when the committee was downsized. I would recommend that it be reinstated. I would also recommend that the Highmark Capital quarterly performance reports for the two 115 plans be added to their agendas. Thank you.
Thank you. Public comment is open on the consent agenda.
Betty Winholtz again. I would like to comment on A3, A4, and A7. And I would say yes to Mr. Alexander's requesting that this and other documents be referred back to the CFAC committee again, because they are experts and valuable advisors to you. My question about A3 was, where does this excess money go? Does it just go back into the general fund? Can it be earmarked for certain projects? What is it that you do with that excess money? It would be my question. On A4, it's about allowing an alcoholic license to the hotel that's right next to the high school. And for that reason, I'm going to raise a concern of, do we want alcohol sold right next to the high school? Maybe there's safeguards, maybe there's not, but I think you need to discuss that. And for A7, when it talks about all our trolleys and the buses and that we're going to have to go to non-gas vehicles, I appreciate that we're not going to get rid of vehicles ahead of time, but we're going to wait till it's time to do that. But I would like to see some kind of audit report on the trolley. As fun as it is to look at the trolleys, I see a lot of empty trolleys. Do we need three trolleys? Can we get by with two or one? But it seems to me before you go and invest in new trolleys, you need to know whether they're worthwhile or not, in my opinion. Certainly our bus system is worth it because it meets the needs of our local community. And so I support that. But I just want to raise my concern about the cost effectiveness of the trolleys.
Thank you. Public comment is open on the consent agenda. AGP, do we have anyone in the queue?
Thank you, Mayor Wixom. We have no hands raised in the queue.
Thank you. With that, I will bring it back to council and close the consent agenda public comment. And I will ask if council has any desire to pull any of the items from A1 to A7 this evening. Seeing none, I will ask for a motion for approval of the consent agenda.
I'll move approval of the consent agenda.
Second?
A second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. With that, we will... With that, we will move on to item C1, and I will turn it over to Mr. Graham.
Thank you, Mayor Wixom. The item you have before you this evening is a request for consideration of a fee reduction in association with permit fees that would apply to properties that were damaged during the January and March storms. Specifically, we received a request several months ago from the property owner at 499 Little Morrill Creek Road, and the Baker family. You see a letter along those lines that's attached to the staff report. I think they are, excuse me, also in the audience this evening, and probably will be speaking once public comment is opened. But in any case, staff took their request under consideration, had a discussion with the previous interim city manager, Greg Carpenter, regarding their request, and through that process of taking it under consideration, we thought it should be maybe made available to others, and perhaps instead of a complete fee waiver, that we consider a reduction up to 50% of the permit fees, and those would be planning and building permit fees that would be associated with remodel work and reconstruction work for damaged properties from those storms. We've kind of put together a program that's got five components to it. One would be, the first one would be to reduce the permit fees by up to 50%, but in no case can the fee reduction exceed the cost of the reconstruction of the homes or the repair work done when you take it into consideration of the insurance that was received and maybe any FEMA reimbursements that were received by the property owners. And again, this would apply to all property owners that received damage from the storms, not just an individual. The fee waiver request would be a limited duration, meaning it would extend to the end of this year, so December 31st, so we would need to receive any requests prior to that. The third item would be all fees associated with post-approval revisions to projects and planning or building approvals would be charged at the regular fee rate. And what does that mean? That means oftentimes what happens more likely in building than in planning, but you'll have somebody that comes in, submits their application, pays their fees, and then we'll make revisions later on down the road. And if it's beyond that December 31st date, those revisions would be charged out at the normal fees based on the city's fee schedule. The fee waivers would not be transferable. So if someone were to come in to get a fee waiver and then reconstruct their home and then come in to get their home finaled, but in the interim it had been sold, we would, before finaling the house, we would require the full payment of fees. And the intent is to, service our current residents that were affected by the storms and not folks buying new houses or houses in Morrill Bay. From an eligibility standpoint, it would have to be somebody that could prove that their residence or property was damaged or destroyed by the January and February, March flood events, that it was their primary residency. And then all applicants requesting a fee waiver would be required to submit proof of ownership and primary residency. If you take a look at what the cost would be, say, in association with the replacement of a new single-family home, about 2,100 square feet. Total permit fees and planning and building would be approximately $30,000. And so if you take half of that, so the reduction would be $15,000. I think, the request is not dissimilar to requests that you see or to policies that you see in other communities in response to, the fires that we've had over the past several years. A lot of communities have reduced or even waived fees associated with that. Some of the communities that did experience, flood damage from the recent storms also reduced fees. So it's not an uncommon thing. And so that request is what's before you this evening. I'm happy to go into greater depth if you have questions or what have you. But with that, I'll conclude my presentation and take any questions that you might have. So.
Thank you, Mr. Graham. Council questions?
I would just like to know if it applies to only residences or businesses as well.
I think we would apply it to all properties that were damaged, commercial as well.
Thank you.
Councilmember Burton, any questions? Yeah. Councilmember Edwards?
Yeah, I know that you used an example as 499 Little Morrill Creek. Have we had any other properties come forward already?
We haven't had ones that have come forward requesting a fee waiver or reduction on those. We've had some come in and get some permits to do some repair work, drywall repair, electrical repair, those types of things.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a few questions, but if you can go ahead. Okay. All right. okay. So I have a few questions. Thank you, Director Graham. The first one is, would the fee reduction of these permits, does it cost the city? Will we, like staff time, that sort of thing, does this 50% still cover the hard costs that we have?
I mean, it would approximately cover the cost of city performing the work. I would think it probably would. You do a plan check on a single-family home. It is kind of extensive, so, I mean, to that extent, I would question whether it would do that or not. I did forget to mention that we would be looking in Mr. Qualick's house as to whether they're meeting regularly with FEMA right now related to the damage that we experienced. And one of the things we were going to ask them is if we did put this program in place, would we be able to see reimbursement for the fee waivers? And we don't have an answer to that question yet, but that is something that we would be asking our FEMA representatives that we're dealing with. So.
Okay. So a follow-up to that would be if you believe that it covers our city's costs, could we consider reducing it even more?
Questionable whether it covers all of them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's the fee is designed to cover the cost of performing the service.
Okay.
So if you're doing a full-blown plan check, that's going to be approximately what it costs. The permitting associated with the planning side of this would be for a house in this location. We use the 499 Little Morrill Creek Road location because it's in an area that's identified as environmentally sensitive habitat, and so any projects that go in those that come in for planning permits are required to go to Planning Commission because it's in the coastal appeal jurisdiction of the city. So that's what our zoning code requires for development in those areas, and so you see also a larger fee there than you might otherwise have elsewhere if you weren't subject to having to go to Planning Commission where at a staff level type situation.
Okay. And then thank you for that answer. And then my last question is you had mentioned that others have come forward requests, or I don't know if they got a permit or if they were just talking to you about getting a permit for repair work. But if have we had any permits already granted for flood damage? And if so, would we... If we follow through with this tonight, would we go back and reduce, like, give them 50% of their permit fees back?
We haven't had anybody ask for a waiver. We have had some folks come in and, again, get over-the-counter building permits for some repair work. And most of that repair work was related to drywall repair and electrical repair, is my understanding. Because... Right, the flood level got up to a point where it was over outlets and things like that, and so those things needed to be replaced.
So would that apply then? So if we were to go through with this tonight, would we look?
Somebody could come back and ask us for, you know, those types of permits are fairly inexpensive, a few mm-hmm. hundred bucks. So the impact would be fairly negligible. And we haven't had a bunch of them.
Okay.
You know, when talking with the building division, they said we've had a handful.
Okay. But I just wanted to hear that we would consider that if we did go move forward with this tonight, that if someone were to come forward yeah. and request 50% back.
Yes, I think so. And again, I think the fiscal impact would be minimal.
Okay. Because, you know, I mean, depending on everyone's position, even half of $100 means a lot to some people.
Fair
so, yeah. So, okay. That's it for my questions for now. Thank you.
Thank you. I think my only question following up on Council Member Ford's would be one of the criteria in there was about FEMA reimbursement in that. So I would wonder that probably wouldn't cover those lower fees. But with that, I'm going to... Yes.
So with the environmental work that has to be done, if someone is rebuilding a house, do they need to go through that? Because it was already there, right?
Yeah, so depending on what you were doing, if you were building back in the same footprint, there wouldn't be really any environmental work that would go along with it. if you're moving it and putting it someplace else, then there would be environmental work and you would be responsible for doing whatever that is. I'm going to use the example of the property that we have in the staff report just because it sits at the confluence of Morrow Creek and Little Morrow Creek. Again, environmentally sensitive habitat, and for a number of reasons, but you have setbacks related to that from the creek banks. We have those requirements in our local coastal program, in our zoning code, and in general plan they have to adhere to. And because you have wetland habitat in those areas, you have to do environmental studies to address impacts to that. I think the intent of the homeowners in this instance is to move the home out of the floodplain and above the floodplain, so they don't have that issue, but they would have to do some environmental work in conjunction with that.
Okay.
That permitting.
Thank you. And then one last question. If only charging them 50% is okay, does that mean that we're making 50% profit on?
That's a good point. I was going to make a clarification before we finished up here. Our fees are based on cost recovery, so we would be subsidizing that process through this. I didn't say that very well. I apologize.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions? And with that, I will open public comment. I do have one speaker slip, and that's from Heather Baker.
Hi there, thank you. Glad to put a face with the email. My name's Heather Baker. I have a little presentation. I, along with my husband, Travis Baker, we are the owners at 499 Little Morrow Creek Road, and I appreciate Jen and Zara's questions, and Cindy, thank you guys. Excellent questions. So this is me and my family on our patio. Last Halloween, we can skip. And these are our kids. I think that we made the good decision not to bring them here tonight, as it would have been a lot more chaotic. So Raleigh is 5.5 and Kate is 2.5. And this is the family that lives in this residence at this property in Morrow Bay. This was the day we got our keys. I want to save my time, so we'll carry through. And then the next will be a video of the extent of the flooding. The floodwaters actually rose another 6 inches from this video to a height of 42 inches. We lost virtually all of our things, which you can see in my letter. But the thing that we have been going through is we have been working diligently to file claims with our insurances and FEMA and the so forth. There is no coverage for building permits or any associated surveys that might be required in order to repair or rebuild a home. Scott had mentioned that if we rebuild in the same footprint that we wouldn't be required to do those surveys. However, that is not what was told to us months ago when we started this process. Hence, we have gotten a biologist and an archaeologist and these so forth to comply with the building department. While we appreciate that the effort has been made and that staff thinks a 50% waiver is an impactful statement to demonstrate the city's compassion for disaster victims, a 100% waiver would be substantially more impactful to our family and our already inadequate budget for this project. If we were to build a 2,100 square foot house, which is the same size as the house that has been on the property since 1934, the city would allow us to only pay $14,493. What do these building and planning fees go for? Are they wages or reviews, or are they revenue generators for the city? While we do not intend for the city to go into debt on our behalf or incur any costs on our behalf, we cannot imagine that any of the wages needed to be paid for plan review or inspections or et cetera could amount even close to the $14,000 proposed for our project. If the city is unable to provide a 100% fee waiver due to costs actually incurred or reimbursable by FEMA, then we would like to further discuss actual costs. In my research, FEMA has provided assistance to state and local governments for building code and floodplain administration and enforcement, including inspections for substantial damage compliance, and I hope that that will continue for our city to offset some of these costs that might be incurred to support our residents. Thank you.
Thank you. Public comment is open on item C1 for anyone wishing to speak.
Good evening, Terry Simons again.
I am supportive of the idea of the city allowing victims of the flood to get some benefit back on fees that they would be paying. I wanted to give the director an opportunity to correct his verbal record wherein he said the fees were going to be $3,000, but the refund would be $15,000. So having heard the last speaker, my suspicion is that he meant to say the fees would be $30,000 and the refund would be $15,000. So perhaps he should correct the verbal record. Fundamentally, I think it's outrageous to me that this homeowner is going to be charged what I would consider excessive fees to basically rebuild their home. If they're building a whole new home, that's one thing. If they're rebuilding their home, that seems like an awful lot of fees, $30,000 in fees to rebuild their home. $15,000 and $30,000 is a little different than $3,000 and $1,500. So I think we need to get those numbers straight, but I tend to believe the last speaker probably has the numbers ingrained in her brain. Generally, I think that the city should do everything they can to help their citizens. We are here. You all work for us. And we expect a certain amount of compassion from our leaders and from our staff when it comes to issues like this. Whether or not the fees are justified, whether or not they are simply a recovery of costs, I think is irrelevant in this particular case. I think this is a situation where the city needs to show some real compassion to a family that has been displaced through no fault of their own. Thank you.
Natalia Merzoyan. I didn't come here to talk about anything in particular. I just was in the audience, and I couldn't agree more with Mr. Simon. And I'd go a step farther. I think it's incumbent on the city in the first place, which I realize was back in 1934, to do good engineering and surveying of the property on which they're going to allow building, and they should take responsibility for problems such as this, which obviously there's something dreadfully wrong with the engineering of this home in the first place. So I think in view of the fact that we're trying to keep people in their homes as much as possible and not, you know, have them forced out due to unusual circumstances, which to me it's pretty obvious that it's not the fault of the homeowner. But I think the city can take responsibility for this. And it should be a good neighbor thing to do. I'm sure in the long run it would be less cost creating than having a family of four out on the streets and homeless. So I hope you do the right thing. Thank you.
Public comment is open on item C1. Seeing there's no more public comment, AGP.
Thank you, Mayor Wixom. There are no raised hands in the queue.
Thank you. With that, I will close public comment and bring it back to council. Mr. Graham, I'm going to come back to you for a few clarifications. I believe that you said the building was a new home, not back on the same site, not on the pre-existing?
The last conversations that the owners had with our staff was that they were going to be moving the home, reconstructing the home.
Okay.
In an area that's not under where the current footprint is and up out of the floodplain was my understanding.
Okay. Thank you. And then questions on the permitting fees?
I thought I said 30,000 and 15,000. Don't think I said 1,500 or 3,000. Okay. $30,000 would be the planning and building permit fees for the a new home in that location, and then half of that, 50%, is $15,000.
Thank you for clarification. Council, any more questions before we go to comment? No comments? No questions?
Have we looked at the difference between the benefit of having people live in these houses versus the waiving of fees and also the businesses too, like if people are to not rebuild their businesses, how does that affect the city and houses? You know, have we looked at that at all? Or is there any kind of?
I mean, this is private property. You know, they have a right to rebuild in, you know, on their properties in, you know, in a manner consistent with the city's codes. You're talking about, like, is it a good idea to have, you know, multiple structures in a floodplain? Clearly not.
No. I'm saying, is it a benefit? Like, what's the benefit to us for them to rebuild their houses rather than just abandon them? Or,
well, they'd be maintaining their property. They, you know, in the instance of the Bakers, they'd be building their home back in a manner consistent with the floodplain requirements that the city has, which is a good thing, so that they wouldn't have the same thing happen again to them. I think their issue right now is, you know, that the home that's there has been there for many years, you know, sits well below the base flood elevation, and they experienced, you know, flooding from both Morrow Creek and Little Morrow Creek, and, you know, in a catastrophic manner because of the location of the confluence of two creeks.
I guess I'm getting at, like, the property taxes will increase when they rebuild their house, right?
Correct.
So that will be a benefit to the city. And same with the businesses, and the businesses will be able to continue doing business, which is a benefit to the city, right?
Versus having shuttered businesses, I think, yeah. I agree with you, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Comments? Councilmember Edwards, Councilmember Ford, somebody want to lead off?
Yes, sir, I'm just trying to figure out how to ask this. I recognize that they are rebuilding an existing home. Would there be a difference, Mr. Graham, if it was built in the same footprint as opposed to built away from there in a higher area to protect the home? Is there a difference if they were going to build it in the same footprint as opposed to in a higher ground?
Is there a difference?
They're
rebuilding it. The question is, can you rebuild it in the same location in a manner consistent with the city's floodplain ordinance, and that is having your finished floor 2 foot above the base flood elevation? I don't know what the base flood elevation is in their location, so I don't know what that would look like. But potentially you could do that in the same location. The fees remain the same. We don't charge impact fees, so what you're not seeing in these fees, like, they're usually a lot more because the impact fees get charged, but this is an existing home, so theoretically they already bought in to our system. So you're not seeing, you know, water and wastewater impact fees, those types of things being charged. Impact fees for fire and police services, those types of things aren't being charged as part of this because the home exists there. So again, ideas they already bought in. So this is just straight building and planning permit we're talking about, really.
Yeah, I mean, my reason I had the opportunity to visit New Orleans in the Ninth Ward after Katrina, and it was an absolute horrifying thing to see. And those people, of course, did not know that was going to happen. And the rebuild became about the community, you know, really wrapping around those, you know, homeowners and building homes higher up. And so I was just wondering if there was something. I'm just trying to think of something, I guess, that is, because it's a horrible situation.
I have a question. My question is for Director Graham. You had mentioned that the property that that has been discussion tonight has it's environmentally sensitive and there's more costs involved in this particular permit. Do you foresee other properties that will come forward that need permitting to do their repair work? Is this kind of unique, this specific property? Are we going to see
the other permits that come forward, do you predict that they will also need all this extra work in the permitting process that will create more costs for our staff?
I'm not aware, Councilmember Ford, of any other properties that has sustained the damage to the extent that their home did, to the extent that their home can't be repaired in its current location. So I don't have information related to anybody else that is, you know, that had the same level of damage. The other repair work that was done in that location was largely to, I mean, there were some residences as well, but largely to commercial buildings. And that was drywall replacement, things like that. So it wasn't expensive. I mean, those folks came in and got over-the-counter permits to do that.
Okay.
At the building counter. They didn't have to do anything else because they weren't changing the location of their building. They weren't expanding the location of their building. They weren't putting it someplace else.
Okay. So in your educated opinion, would you say that this probably will be the bulk of this will be the highest cost that the city would be letting go of based off this project alone?
From what I know right now, yes, that would be correct. There could be some other folks that come forward retroactively, you know, for some of those over-the-counter permits that we issued. And in talking with our building inspectors, you know, they've been out there and talked to most of the property owners, and it doesn't sound like anybody else is really anticipating coming in with any sort of big repair project.
Okay.
That's from them. They were the boots on the ground. They talked to the property owners out there, and that's the information that I have right now.
Okay. I have one last question. And this may be for Ms. Johnson-Rios. What would it look like if we were to just go full on 100% fee reduction for this permitting process? Based off of what you just said, Director Graham, like this is probably the bulk of it, and then we might have a few more permits come across with that 50% reduction or 100% reduction if we were to do that. So we're looking at maybe, I'm just throwing a number out there, $20,000 maybe that will, or maybe, no, more than that. It would be, if it was 100%, maybe we're looking at $50,000 or less dollars we would lose in permitting. Just an estimate.
I don't have a great estimate for it because I didn't go look at all of the other permits that were pulled over there. I just talked with our building permit technician and her indication was that we issued a handful of over-the-counter permits for repair work over there. Those permits tend to be under $10,000, the work tends to be under $10,000, so the fee's like, you know, $150.
Okay. I'm just curious what kind of position this would put our city in if we were, based off of the questions that have been asked tonight, it sounds like at the 50% mark, we could still recover costs. However, you know, it also tugs at the heartstrings, wanting to help our fellow citizens in the consideration of 100%. We also are a business in, you know, the city of Morro Bay, and I don't want to compromise us in any way. And I'm just curious what this could potentially do to us as a city if we were to consider reducing it more than 50%. And I don't know if that's a question for our finance department or if that's something that we would even have information about.
Councilmember Ford, just to point of clarification, the fees that are charged are set at cost recovery. I think Director Graham was referring to the fact that when we have our master fee schedule adopted, you know, we have consultants prepare fees in general. But if there was a 50% reduction, then that would be a 50% reduction in costs. It's not that we would have cost recovery at 50% because these fees are set at cost recovery. So I just wanted to clarify that for the record.
Thank you for that clarification. I appreciate that. And I think you said that and just didn't really click, and I appreciate that clarification.
And yes, Director Graham clarified that again, but I wanted to just make sure that's our fees are 100% cost recovery.
Got it. And then I see Ms. Johnson-Rios nodding her head in agreement there.
Agreed. And I, to your broader question, Councilmember Ford, I think there are so many revenue line items in the city's general fund budget that it would be difficult to say with all of the other moving parts if this would, you know, what substantive impact this decision might have on the broader general fund. But the general fund operating budget ranges between I think for the current fiscal year, it's between $18 and $20 million to give you a sense of scale.
Okay. Thank you all for that clarification. I'm done with questions.
Councilmember Barton, comments?
I guess what I would say is that this is a very sad situation. You presented it very, very well. Looking at the height of the water compared to the windows on your house is just, it's an amazing thing to see. And I'm so sorry that you have had to go through this.
Thank you. I went out there the day of the flood, and in full disclosure, I know the Bakers very well. They're families, friends of our family, and I've known Travis for quite a while. It was overwhelming, to say the least. Mr. Collins and I went out there and walked through it. Over the past several months, as many of them have been rebuilding their businesses and things out there, there was some questions about support from the city, and I know one of the speakers talked about that, and this is a conversation that's been ongoing for a while, so we are very compassionate, but we also have to be responsible to the cost of the city so that we aren't gifting public funds. We could be accused of that also. So finding that balance of supporting our community and helping along the way, we're not a wealthy city. We have fixed costs, and there are maybe no other businesses or homes that will come to us, but potentially there are, and so we have to consider that also. I was comfortable when speaking with Mr. Carpenter before, when he asked me about this, bringing it forward and allowing the council to have this conversation with this family and others in that community or in Morro Bay that may need some sort of support. But I'm also being conscientious of our responsibility to cost recovery, which we won't receive, as that's already been clear with the reduction, but it will make a big difference in their ability and helping them. I'm comfortable with the 50% reduction, and if someone up here would like to propose something else, I'm open to hearing why that would be and the reasons, but I think that there was due diligence done by our community development department in coming up with this amount that wouldn't impact the cost of services in the department, and so that's kind of my position right now.
Well, I just would like to see if we could factor in the increase in property tax against the, like, if we were to possibly waive the permit fees, and when would we recoup that money? Maybe is that possible that we could look at that a little further?
We recognize very little of the property tax. Most of it goes to the school district and the county, so there's only a small portion that comes back to the city. So would you be willing to do that then if other permits come forward? Because then you're kind of getting into a real...
In that area?
Well, we didn't include just that area. We said anyone in the city that was impacted by flood damage. So, you know, you would have to do that with every single property then or business that potentially could come in and ask for some sort of fee waiver, then looking at that. This was just a clean deal, an opportunity, you know, to try and have some significant support mm-hmm. for this particular property. Financial support for, you know, what it is they're asking for. I think you get into a lot of convoluted area.
Right.
Mr. Neumeier?
So the city manager and I were just discussing briefly for property taxes. I think there would be a reduction in the property taxes paid to the county if you didn't have a rebuild, because then when the reassessment's done, you don't have a structure there. So we would see a reduction in what goes to the county, and then, of course, the city receives it's 10 to 15% or something of whatever the property taxes are paid. So if there wasn't a rebuild, then we would see a decrease in some property tax revenue that would go to the city. If a rebuild was done, I'm assuming you would be assessed at roughly the same value. Because they would probably carry over this. I don't think you would see an increase if they're Mr. Graham might know. I mean, I'm not a property I'm not a tax expert, but
I'm not exactly sure how that would work. It's a good question.
I don't think that the property taxes would be assessed at like a new home's value because you're rebuilding.
I think that's how it works.
If Mary, if I, you're in council, I'm like chomping a bit to talk about this one because I wanted to say that I wanted to express my sympathy to the Baker's family, and then my last community was flooded as well. And then just like Mayor, you stated when you, and then some of the council members stated, when you go onto the property, you see these victims, you really have a different view of how devastating a situation can be. So I certainly, I'm very, very sorry for what you went through. And then I know that's very, very stressful, especially you have a young family. And then, so we are very sensitive to your situation. And then it's the city's desire to, like Mayor stated, the city wanted to help to be part of this, help you rebuild. That said, I do want to say that just clarify a few questions that the council brought up, which I thought was very, very helpful. First of all, thank you, City Attorney, to clarify and reinforce Mr. Graham's clarification in that the fees are designed to cost recovery. So with the 50% fee waiver, in reality, is that the 50%, about $15,000 is going to be have to be absorbed by other source of revenue. And then if you look at this way, is that the Baker family are not paying for that. The rest of the folks are going to pay for it. So then that's something that, you know, for City Council to consider that point. And then as far as the FEMA reimbursement portion, that I actually need to take blame for that. I suggest that to be added to the memo for City Council to consider, because I thought, well, just like Council, you realize the city is not a rich city by any means, and we need to consider the sustainability to sustain our financial current kind of financial health, really. So want to consider a waiver, and I saw this is really, really wild and unsure. We don't know if FEMA is going to reimburse us for this compensation or not, but our staff is willing to look into that, and so we'll see what FEMA may tell us. And plus, I think Public Works the director can correct me if I'm wrong, this is going to take a very long time for FEMA to respond with any kind of response. So basically, we don't know. Probably with my experience, I lived through several hurricanes in Florida, and then I doubt recovery efforts, so I can speak on that. The recovery is going to take years. You may not get your money back until maybe 5 years down the road. I won't be surprised. So is city willing to, if council are considering waive 100% of their permit fee, is city willing to wait for all this time for to be burdened by this upfront dollar amount? That's something city council need to consider. Also, city attorney has clarified the property tax question. It's as city attorney stated, I did some research on property tax. It's like city council, as you're aware, that school is going to get the majority of the property tax from all the property tax we pay. The city are getting maybe at most 10%. That is based on my research at my past job in different county, it's only 1%, if that much, because $500,000 home, we use $500,000 home. You can find those where I came from. And then I know you couldn't find it here, but the research we did with the assessor And then the county auditor is that the city only get $50 of that $500,000 home, which if you have a $500,000 home and you pay $5,000 property tax, city get $50 out of that. So just to show you how little it is. Of course, I'm very, very new to Slo County, so I can't speak. I can't read my information. Slo County still needs to be verified. But what I can say is that the city doesn't really get much of the property tax out of that. But I would agree with the attorney that rebuild will be able to, the assessor would not, the value of the property tax would not decrease. And also, I wanted to let the council know that there is, California has Prop 2 or something like that. It basically, the login your property tax, property value, the assessor can only increase 2% each year. And then so that being said, Baker family, whatever their assessed value is now, after rebuild, again, I'm not expert on that. I still do not think it's going to be that much more, maybe 2% more, the value, the increase. It's just unfortunate sometimes that these older homes, if this one is built in 1934, so at that time when it's built, I don't think there's any floodplain requirement. I know an audience was saying that, well, this is kind of city should have done a better job to regulate a little better, engineer doing some job, do a better job, and so that this situation is not going to happen. I certainly can relate to that, but I also want to point out that the home built in 1934, there's really no regulation, and that's why we're stuck in the situation this time, and we now have some design standards, and hopefully moving forward, the homes can be not in this situation when we have a flood like this, and it's very devastating by any means. So I want to just clarify a few points for City Council.
Thank you for that.
I'm ready to make a motion, but I'd like to first comment with relationship to what I said about my experience in New Orleans and Katrina. The same goes out to the people of Maui right now. And it is hard when you have these types of emergency situations that are by nature and not of man, and you just don't know. You can't be prepared for that, and no matter when your house was built, right? So I feel for the Bakers. My heart goes out to you, but I do believe that we've come to something that seems to be the most logical and realistic motion to make. So I'd like to motion that we approve resolution number 54-23, temporarily reducing building and planning permit fees by 50% for properties damaged by the 2023 winter storms. The fee reduction would run through the end of 2023 and be available to those that can demonstrate that other sources of recovery dollars, FEMA, homeowners insurance, are insufficient to cover costs of repair and permitting.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second it.
A motion and a second. Any more discussion?
I'd like to say why I seconded your motion. I think you can tell by my questions tonight that I really wanted to go lower than 50%, because as it's been said many times, my heart as well goes out to the Baker family and everyone who was affected in the floods and any natural disaster that's happening right now. And I really do wish that we could go lower, but based off of the information we were given tonight, knowing that we're already going to have to absorb the remaining 50% as a city, I think whoever, I don't know if it was Mr. Carpenter, if it was the mayor, whoever came up with, or staff, or if it came to us that with the suggestion of the reduction of the permit cost, but I think whoever brought that up, because I'm proud of us for being here to discuss some sort of aid for the victims of this catastrophe. So
I wish we could do more, but at this time I feel the responsibility also of the taxpayers. So that's basically in a nutshell why I seconded your motion. So
thank you, Member. Councilmember Ford, any other comments before the vote?
I can see both sides of the situation for sure. Coming from that WRF subcommittee meeting where we found out that we are going to remove the monument sign that cost more than this, what we're talking about, and that's just going to be, it's just hard for me. I know that different things have different prices and they come from different places. The money comes from different places, but that's where kind of I'm coming from, but I see that. We're in a tough position.
Thank you. With that, we have a motion and a second, and I'm going to do a voice vote. All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Thank you. With that, we have our last item, C2, and that is going to be Mr. Qualick.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, members of the City Council. Tonight we have a presentation of the quarter four fiscal year 23, thank you, WRF quarterly report. This is a receive and file presentation. Staff is not asking City Council to take any action on tonight's report. Typically, we will couple this report with contract amendments that are requested or change orders. We don't have any of those this time. As the City Council knows, the WRF project in general is winding down in terms of the WRF or work plants as well as the conveyance project. We're expecting the closeout of the design build contract with Phelons Black & Veatch in the coming months. They have remaining punch list items to do and some cleanup work with the V-ditch issue. On the conveyance side, we still have a contract with Anvil that we're also expecting closeout in the coming months, notwithstanding this brine line issue that Councilmember Landrum raised earlier in today's meeting. Anvil is working on a couple of punch list items still this week, and they are in town. And then beyond that, we are looking forward to the indirect potable reuse / recycled water component of the project, which we expect to take a couple more years. So tonight, in this presentation, you'll hear a construction update on all three components of the project. The presenters will also give general project updates, and I'd ask also Mr. Amico to address the question about the bike path drainage, and then we'll take council questions from there. So I'll first bring up Mr. Amico. He's the program manager for the entire project, and he'll be followed by Dan Heimel from Confluence Engineering, who is the project manager of the recycled water project.
Good evening, Council, members of the public, and welcome City Manager Kimball. We haven't met yet, but hello. I'm Paul Amico, WRF Program Manager. I've been managing the two major construction projects, the Water Resources Center and also the Conveyance Facilities Project. So we'll do a brief construction update. Director Qualick already did quite a bit about that in his opening remarks. As we said, we're focused on the punch list, which, as I think we've talked about in the past, are the, I call them the million little details that it takes to close a major capital project out. Director Qualick mentioned that Anvil's been back in town this week. I do believe that they will wrap up tomorrow, though, as construction normally goes, I'll say Friday, and then everybody will be real happy when they finish tomorrow. So that's what you're seeing in the pictures here, just, again, miscellaneous items that have been completed. In the last quarter, I said it's always strange to talk about what happened 6 weeks ago, but I will say that a lot of the testing at the Water Resources Center has been completed for the drinking water component, the advanced water treatment facility, and we are focused with city staff on completing the final acceptance testing to close that project out. So with that, one thing, I get at the end of the presentation, talk about the bike path, or you think it'd be good here? Okay. So the quarterly report, as we generally do, it takes in all the costs from the prior quarter and presents those along with challenges and current activities, current key activities. We submitted that to the city staff and got that approved for discussion at PWAB and then at council. We submitted that on August 8th. Total spending through the fourth quarter of 2023, sorry about that, that's a typo there, it's the fourth quarter, is just shy of $140 million against $159.8 million budget. And as I said, it presented the accomplishments, challenges, and upcoming activities, largely focused on the water, on the recycled water component of the program, because that's the big focus moving forward after the closeout of the major construction projects. So as in both the Water Resources Center and Conveyance, we've continued to complete final punch list items, performed and completed the first two phases of the Division of Drinking Water Challenge Test, which challenges the advanced water treatment facility against different constituents that may be present in wastewater to determine how effective it is at removing those constituents. That testing has since been completed. It was completed in July. Those are phases 3 and 4, and we've now moved into the final acceptance test of the plant to prove that it works as a whole, as a complete plant, treating wastewater, doing the advanced treatment facility, and making the water for the indirect potable reuse component. With that, I will turn it over to Mr. Heimel. He will wrap up, talk about recycled water, the overall schedule, and then I can come back up and talk about the bike path.
Thanks, Paul. Mayor Wixom, members of the council, pleased to provide the update on the recycled water portion of the program. Let me know if you have problems hearing me. Sometimes I have challenges getting close enough to the mic. Really, the focus on the recycled water program in this last quarter has been all about groundwater. We've talked with you at previous meetings about the basis of design report, and that's what the recycled water program team has really been focused on preparing. And so GSI, in this fourth quarter, prepared the admin draft of the basis of design report. The basis of design report is really the plan. What is this program going to look like? Where are the injection wells going to be located? How much are they going to inject? Where is the extraction going to occur? How much is going to be able to be extracted? And then what are all the constraints that govern what this final program looks like? And so they, GSI, Water Solutions, prepared the admin draft. And then as part of its due diligence, the city had a third-party hydrogeologist come in and perform a full peer review of that admin draft. We brought in Cleith Harris Geologist, a local recognized expert in groundwater here on the Central Coast, also a hydrogeologist with extensive experience here working in the Morro Basin. So they understand the basin. They were able to provide a lot of great comments and input. All that input and comments was then received by GSI, and then they worked on preparing the updated draft of the basis design report or the plan for the IPR program. Additionally, what happened in the second quarter is the city received final award notification for the $1.2 million Integrated Water Resource Management, our IRWM grant. We've talked to you about that grant before. It had to go through a number of different approval steps, including the IRWM subcommittee, the RAC, the County Board of Supervisors, and then finally the Department of Water Resources. And so the city did get that final award notification last quarter. And then finally, Waterworks Engineers has been assisting the city in evaluating different alignment alternatives to convey the recycled water. The current pipeline, it terminates along the bike path. How can we convey that recycled water to the injection wells? And looking at a couple of different alternatives to help inform the city's plan for this program. And I'm going to cheat a little bit and just talk about what we've been doing since the end of last quarter. We've really been working on taking the information from the basis of design report, the information from Waterworks on the different pipeline alignment alternatives, and putting together recommendations for the strategy. Not only what can this program look like at full build-out when the city is fully developed and there are much higher wastewater flows, but also what are the recommendations for the implementation of the first phase of this program? What does the city need now, and what does that infrastructure look like? One more slide. So lastly, we have the schedule. And really, the focus of the schedule right now is on the IPR program. The other components of the WRF project are wrapping up, working through punch list items. So if you look at the bottom portion of the schedule, you'll see that the basis of design report is wrapping up. We'll be bringing that to WRF subcommittee, PWEB, the council here soon. And then that will inform the design phase of the project, where the city will enter into detailed design of the pipelines and the injection wells for the IPR program, moving into construction, and then operations targeting 2025. Now I'm going to turn it back over to Paul.
All right, glad to take questions after this, but just wanted to touch a little bit on the bike path, because we did get this question at PWAB the other night about the grading along the bike path. So the bike path historically, right, there were three questions I had heard, two related to drainage and then one on ongoing maintenance. So we put in some locations along the bike path when it was graded. It was graded to promote drainage from any runoff from Highway 1 to get across, because as you go to the along the bike path, Highway 1 is built up higher than the bike path, and we can't trap water between the bike path and that embankment. It would erode that area. It would overtop the bike path anyway. And so we did build in some low spots to allow that drainage to go across the bike path and get over to Willow Camp Creek, which runs between the easement area and the power plant and Vistra properties. And then the low point, the concrete area down, again, it's where Willow Camp Creek crosses the bike path. When we were moving forward through initial planning, coastal development permitting, design, trying to get this project into construction to meet the time schedule order, we had a difficult decision to make, which was to actually do a trenchless crossing in that area, put a casing pipe under there, and not dig that up, because it's a jurisdictional waterway, and the permitting process would have cost us a lot of time and a lot of money and effort. We've cost the city a lot of time, money, and effort to get that done. So that area will continue to, it is a low area. There was nothing really we could do. Those box culverts there require maintenance. I believe those are on Caltrans property, so those are Caltrans' responsibility to keep those clean, because that drains the Caltrans right away. And so unfortunately, we would have loved as part of the project to improve that area, but our hands were a bit tied from a permitting perspective. I did remember the fence question. Those are Caltrans fences. That's Caltrans' responsibility to replace all the fence between the highway and the bike path.
Thank you, Mr. Amico and Mr. Heimel. I just wanted to add one thing before council questions. We did get some questions over email about the cost of recycled water per acre foot. That is something that we are currently developing. We're starting to get a good idea of what that looks like. I'll share. We think it's going to be cheaper than we originally had anticipated, but it would be inappropriate for us to provide those numbers tonight, because those numbers, we really want to be precise about them. Those numbers are going to inform policy decisions that the City Council will face in the future, and that we'll be bringing back to the City Council at a future meeting once it's been vetted through the WRF subcommittee and through the Public Works Advisory Board. And so we won't have those numbers for City Council tonight. And with that, we'll take questions.
Thank you, Mr. Kwalik. I appreciate that. I'll start down on my left with Councilmember Ford. Questions?
I'm going to hold my questions for now.
Thank you. Councilmember Edwards?
So one of the questions that I had is with regard to the reclamation facility, and where are we now? I noticed that there was a difference time about a year between the engineering design February of 23 and the construction notice to proceed. Why is there so much time in between there, Mr. Kwalik?
Thank you for the question, Councilmember Edwards. Could you let me know what you're looking at?
Oh, great.
I want to make sure I'm answering the
right
question.
Now finding it. Oh, yeah, you might have to circle back, because I should have numbered these. I apologize.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find that, Mr. Qualick. Sorry. I'll circle back around. Yeah. I did want to make a comment that some of the city's modifications or their reasons to eliminate items to lower costs, I did recognize those, and I recognize they were often made around safety throughout the FBV amendment details. Such things as architecture of operations buildings, you know, these were kinds of things, bypass lines that were eliminated, centralizing of all chemical storage, et cetera. But there was some area where I was trying to understand this, Mr. Qualick, conduit alternate designs, the difference between using ones that are PVC coated as opposed to not PVC coated. And I was just curious as to why we would choose not to do that in one area and then in another area use it. So in terms of, I think it's like the wastewater and then this was an electrical area. So I'm just trying to understand how something's, maybe I should put it this way, how something is deemed value engineering suggestion. So how do we, what's the process that we make decisions like that?
Thank you for the question, Councilmember Edwards. I'm not a piping expert. I'll call up our program manager and engineer, Paul Amico, to address that.
Thank you.
And so in the specific case of PVC coated conduit, it would be used, it is more expensive than normal like galvanized conduit that you would use in less aggressive environments. The headworks where the wastewater comes into the plant, generally a hydrogen sulfide release, because right. Wastewater contains corrosive chemicals when they're released, the hydrogen sulfide being one of them. So you would use a coated conduit in areas like the headworks or like the solids handling area, the sludge handling area, where you are experiencing much higher risk for corrosion.
Okay, thank you. I think I'll hold on to some of my other questions for now.
Thank you. Councilmember Barton, questions?
A couple of screens back, we were looking at an award of what was that, $1.2 million or something. And I just, what exactly was that for?
Thank you for the question, Councilmember Barton. That was for the recycled water portion of the project, $1.2
million. $1.2
million
in a big project like this doesn't sound like a huge award. And so I was just sort of wanting to celebrate that, but wondering, it's was it for like a design or for something other than the actual construction?
Thank you for the question. It's a good question. So I'll speak to the award amount first. So we've received a few grant awards because of the recycled water portion of the project. That's probably the smallest one. And that one came through the county, actually.
Oh, okay.
And so the city was in competition with other county agencies and jurisdictions. And if I recall, Mr. Heimel will correct me if I'm wrong, our project received the highest award amount in the county and got the highest score as well. Yes? Yes. And so we were pretty impressed with the $1.2 million. We've also received a Bureau of Reclamation grant for $9.3 million for recycled water and some loan forgiveness, and
I'm familiar with the bigger numbers. That's why this one stood out to me. What exactly did we get it for?
So we can use it for construction of the recycled water portion of the project.
Thank you.
Could I, maybe I misunderstood, but item code number 6104, the one for GSI Water Solutions and then Cleef Harris, I thought those were two different entities. So they are?
Yes.
They are. So you just, the number, the total expenditure is all totaled there together as one total?
Thank you for the question. Could you let me know what page you're looking at here?
175. I didn't see this before, sorry.
Yeah, thank you for the question. I believe what this table is showing are the different object codes that the city uses. So 6104 is for consulting services. And we have GSI, Water Solutions, and Cleath Harris under 6104 for the recycled water portion of the project. We have other engineering services that are also under 6104 for different portions of the project. So the idea with this table wasn't to single out individual contracts, but to show the expenditures in this quarter from like for those object codes for each project.
Okay, I didn't even realize the Cleath Harris part until just now. So I and then I noticed that those were two together, and I was just wondering why everything else seemed to be separated, and I was just wondering why not that one. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, if you look on the bottom, the last one on the whole table, that there's a couple of consultants combined as well, Far Western and KMA.
Right. Yeah, I see that. Thank you.
Yep.
Councilmember Edwards, did you have your other question?
Yeah, I'm looking at, I found the page. It's under Appendix D, a program milestones. I think I was making reference to the RWF and just noticing the timeline plan for completion dates, and just looking at the engineering design beginning February of 2023, and then noticing there was a year lag to construction notice to proceed. So I was just wanting to understand, why is there a time lag there? Why is there a year there? What does that entail?
That's a good question. Thank you. You know, these are estimates that were put together, I believe, sometime in the beginning of calendar year 2022. With projects such as these, design can take a long time. Mm. So design would involve preparation of plans, specifications, and cost estimates. And then once that design is done, there's going to be extensive review by the city. We'll bring it to a WRF subcommittee, Public Works Advisory Board, and the City Council. So, you know, right there, you're looking at 2 months at least. Uh-huh. And then after that, the city has to issue a bid, and then contractors have to bid on it. So right there, you're looking at another couple of months before construction starts. So given that, if there's a year there, if you subtract, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, we're looking at a design of 6 or 7 months or 8 months, which, you know, frankly, might even be a little optimistic. Design does take a long time for projects such as these.
And if I'm hearing you correctly, that does include community input or outreach, correct?
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I only have one question, and mostly that's because I sit on the subcommittee for the water reclamation facility, so I have an opportunity to participate in this information as it comes forward and vet through some of these challenges that we're having with the punch list and who's responsible for things, and hopefully, you know, our stance is that the city isn't responsible for most of them. You mentioned one item that I just have a question to follow up on about the $9.3 million grant. Is there any update on whether or not we are making any headway in receiving that total amount, or are we still at a reduced amount?
Thank you for the question, Mayor. We have had conversations with Bureau of Reclamation staff, and they've indicated that we will be moving forward with the $9.3 million amount. However, I would just caution that we will be taking to City Council a policy decision on phased implementation of the recycled water program. And should the City Council choose to implement a smaller scale or maybe only initial phases of the program, we may not spend enough money to be eligible to access that full 9.3. But staff at this time believes that if we were to build out the full program, then we would be able to access that full $9.3 million.
Thanks for that clarification, and obviously future agenda item. Oh, not to be discussed tonight. With that, I will open public comment on item C2.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, Council, and staff. My name is Terry Simons. I have ridden on the back of this project since its very inception. I find us at an interesting crossroads where, aside from a few million-dollar punch list items, we're getting down to the end and getting ready to move into the final phase, which is nominally known as the recycled water phase. Early on in the process, years ago, I was concerned that we were going to take highly treated and refined water and inject it back into a groundwater basin that is very, very contaminated with nitrates and other chemicals, then pump that water back out of the basin through the existing city wells and have to treat it yet again before we could put it back into the potable water stream. Now, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, there were no options. We now have options. The state has recently approved laws that allow for what we nominally call toilet to tap. Nobody likes that name. But basically direct reuse of reclaimed water. And it is a direct reuse of reclaimed water. There's no arguing that. The Orange County has built the world's largest reclaimed water facility, and it's a huge facility doing, I'm just speaking from memory, 160 million gallons a day of reclaimed water processing. So the technology is not, as has often been said, an unknown technology. The technology exists. I believe that we have an opportunity, rather than submit our water that's going to go, right now it's going into the ocean. The option that's only option that seems to be available to us under the current thinking is to put it into the ground, but that's several million dollars and years away. What's concerning me is that we're not looking at the option of developing a small treatment plant to process the water, to take it and put it directly into the potable water stream, or perhaps make it available to some of our neighbors like Los Osos, who are desperate for additional water and would love to have our water instead of seeing it go into the ocean. So I would encourage the council, as they move this forward, to request staff, and I'm the one that Greg has preemptively said that the numbers are not available. There are people asking. Well, I'm one of the people asking for what the cost of our processed water at this juncture is. I think rather than repollute that water, I think we should find a more creative use for that water, both short-term and long-term. And I would encourage the council, since there's no real urgency at this point, the urgency is on the part of the consultants, to look at other alternatives. Thank you.
I have two comments with regard to this report. And the first one was to bring to your attention Table 1, Table 2, and Table 3, all of which have percentages of where the original amount of money should have been spent on a particular part of the project and how much it's over. And if you notice on all three of those tables, it's all related to either the pipeline system, the conveyance system, and or the new wells system. Now, the pipeline's done, but the well's not. And if we can avoid a 200% or, in some cases, 4,000% increase, it seems to me what Mr. Simons was just proposing is really a good thing. And that we need to maybe say, are we doing the right thing by doing these wells? Is there another option? Because this is becoming such an expensive feature on this project. And we've already overdone it on the other two pieces. You can see how Anvil has almost doubled the cost that we should have been paying them. So I think it behooves you, as our financial people, or if you're not comfortable, that you find people that can talk about this and give us some advice, because we don't need this third piece of this project to go blow up like the other project, the other two pieces have. That said, my second point is, now that the sign, and this is minutia, but I think it's significant, for me as a person who wants accurate representation and what's going on in my city, that when that sign comes down in front of the sewer plant, that when it goes back up, that it have the correct address on it and it have the old name on it. I don't like that you're changing names on us, and I don't like that you have the wrong address. So now that we have a chance to redo it, let's do it correctly. Thank you.
Anyone else for public comment on item C2? AGP?
Thank you, Mayor Wixom. There are no raised hands in queue.
Thank you. With that, I will close public comment, bring it back to council and comments, and I will remind you this is just a receive and file. Any comments? Anybody?
Well, I would like to thank you both for coming out and providing this report. I do have a question regarding the remaining projected timeline. I know that's been our projected timeline now for some time, ending in 2025. Is that, how confident are we feeling with that projected timeline? Are we being really conservative, or, you know, how are we feeling about that?
Thank you for the question, Councilmember Ford. I assume you're asking about the recycled water facilities?
Yeah, yes, the IPR.
Yeah, I'll call up the project manager to discuss confidence and timeline.
Like a lot of things when it comes to engineering questions, the answer is it depends. So one of the things that we've been doing as program team has really been pushing hard towards this 2025 deadline. That was a deadline that had been communicated to the city, that was a deadline that the WIFI alone needed to be closed out by. It was a deadline that the Clean Water SRF loan needed to be closed out by. And so we were putting together an implementation strategy that allowed us to meet those scheduled deadlines. However, in recent conversations with both of those financing agencies, they have both indicated that there is flexibility. They're seeing in not just the city's project, but in projects across the nation in the WIFIA terms and in the state, that with COVID impacts, construction cost escalation, other things, projects are taking longer than people anticipated. No surprise. And so they are allowing agencies to extend those timelines without jeopardizing their low-interest financing or any of their funding. And so that is one of the things that the program team is really taking into account now. With the potential for additional time, what is the best project for the city today? We were sort of constrained with that timeline previously, and so there is a potential to be a little more unconstrained, for lack of a better term, with that additional time. And so that's what we're working on, and that's what we'll be bringing back, both options, both in cost, but also in timeline to implement for the first phase of the recycled water program.
Okay, thank you. And I have a follow-up. Well, I have another question. I don't know if it's for you, Mr. Heimel. So the question is, I'm the liaison for Public Works Advisory Board, so I was there when Mr. Simons asked brought up this information the first time, and I feel like Director Qualick had some great input. My question is if we were to consider other options, would this be something that Mr. Heimel would help us with, or would this, like, in the contract, we move a different direction if we decided to go with the new law and find other options?
Thank you for the question, Councilmember Ford. I think that would be a major shift in direction of the project if we moved away from indirect potable reuse to direct potable reuse. It is certainly a potential option for the city to go in that direction, but I'd like to just kind of lay out the implications of that. First, it would mean we'd have to construct additional treatment facilities at the Water Resources Center. That space up there was really built out for the facilities that were needed to accomplish indirect potable reuse, so it might be challenging to find the space up there to do that. Second, when we implemented the technologies that we did to build the plant that we built up on the hill. We were the first in California to set it up in the configuration that we set it up in. And if we're interested in details, I can call Paul up to discuss that. But we were then put in a position because of that, because we were sort of a pioneer in the technology, we were put in the position of being a first. And what that meant for the regulators was that we were helping the regulators define the regulations as it went. And that meant a very slow project, and it added to the expense of the project. And it was certainly frustrating. And I would say that we, given the city of Morro Bay's size, given the fatigue with the project and the community, I don't know that we want to be the pioneer on this one. That would probably come at some expense to the city. There are other large jurisdictions, you know, Orange County, City of Los Angeles, Oakland, or whoever would like to do this and may have the funding to be that pioneer. I would just suggest that perhaps that's not what the City Council wishes to do. Third, you know, that there is a real benefit to indirect potable reuse for the City of Morro Bay that is not present with direct potable reuse, and that is with indirect potable reuse, we have storage. We can put the water in the ground. We know that the water doesn't stay there forever. Over some time it goes into the ocean. But the fact is we can put water into the ground and then pull that water back up for our use. If we had a direct potable reuse system, it would be similar to electricity. When you're producing the electricity, that's when you have to use it. If you're producing direct potable reuse and there's nowhere for it to go, then we're just putting it into the ocean anyway. It's true, if we had agreements with partners such as the community of Los Osos or some situation where we send direct potable reuse water to, I don't know, Whale Rock Reservoir, that would be an option. But for indirect potable reuse, which is what we're building, we have storage right now. So that's a certain benefit that I think was the vision of the original project, which is that the project serves as an insurance policy for our water supply. So those would be my comments on that.
Thank you, Director Qualick, for explaining that once more. I figured people would want to hear that. And thank you, Mr. Heimel, for answering my previous question, and that's all I have for this evening. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Edwards. Any comments? To my right, Councilmember Landrum. Nope. Councilmember Barton?
No, thanks.
Okay, so you're good?
Yeah.
So this is a receive and file. Thank you very much, Mr. Qualick, Mr. Heimel, and Mr. Amiel. Council declaration of future agenda items. Anyone? With that, I will move adjournment of the meeting. Thank you.